How can we step off the treadmill of busyness and discover true productivity? Where can we find space for our souls to breathe?
Welcome to the Unhurried Living Podcast. I'm Alan Fadling.
And I'm Jem Fadling. Many of us are hurried, and hurry is costing us more than we realize.
We invite you to join us in the life-giving patterns of Jesus so that you can enjoy more creative energy.
Together, we'll learn to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better. Hi, and thanks for joining us today. Last year, we polled our community and we asked them a key question. What is the biggest challenge you face right now in living a more unhurried life? It's pretty simple, very practical question. And we got some great responses, actually.
We really did. And we took those responses and arranged them into five categories, which are now going to end up being the theme of some of our upcoming episodes. And the themes are, first, practical challenges to living less hurried. That's what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
But then some other categories like dealing with workplace stress, inner distractions and soul busyness, keeping first things first, and noticing God in my busy life. So that's why today's episode is titled Nine Practical Challenges to Living Less Hurried. Specifically, these are challenges that mostly arise from within us. They are personal challenges. It's not about the challenge of our culture or the challenge of peer pressure or anything sort of out there that's a challenge to us. These are the challenges that happen inside of us, places of inward wrestling. So why don't you start us off with challenge number one?
Yeah, it's it is a little harder, isn't it, when it's something that's coming from within, even though you would think you'd have more control over it because it's you.
Yep.
But so let's start with number one. And this challenge is called believing that rest and quiet is okay and maybe even good. So it sounds like this person was saying, can you help me move to the point where I see this is actually something I want or need?
Yeah.
So, you know, although living less hurried sounds inviting, we often struggle to prioritize such a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
We get caught up in the activities and hurry of the world around us, and we often don't make space to cultivate a restful posture. So all of this begins with your thoughts about rest and quiet. So here are some questions that can bring those thoughts into focus. Number one, is it okay to rest?
Mm-hmm.
Can you answer that?
Yeah.
Is it okay to be slower inside, even if I'm busy on the outside?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, is rest good? Now, if you don't believe that rest is good, you will obviously have a hard time prioritizing
it. Sort of goes without saying, doesn't it?
Yeah. So you're going to want to look at these questions and see if you can get yourself to honestly answer them. So let's remember, though, we've said this before, busy and hurried are two different things.
That's right.
We can all be busy because that's a matter of our calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Tasks, other things going on.
Yeah.
But hurry is a matter of our soul. So then the question becomes, can your soul be at peace in the midst of your busy life? So we're saying that it can and that that is good. And this is something that we're learning in our own lives.
Yeah. And, you know, that challenge, the way it was worded, believing that rest and quiet is okay, maybe even good. I think there's sort of a continuum there. I think sometimes we start off feeling like rest and quiet isn't okay.
Right.
It's a waste. It's not allowable. It's out of bounds. I shouldn't be resting. I shouldn't be quiet. We don't really think that out loud. We think it somewhere in the back of our head. But I think what we need to move in the continuum toward is actually rest and quiet are invitations from God.
Yes.
They're not just allowable. They're not just okay. They are good. They are excellent. They are beautiful. These are things to embrace, not to just maybe sort of inch our way into.
Yeah.
So which brings us to the second challenge that we got in our survey, and that is my belief that I am what I do. This is what keeps me from focusing on who I'm becoming. So that is a very practical challenge to living less hurried. If my identity is yet to be established, I'll run around trying to do enough, possess enough, and impress enough people to prove that I'm valuable, to prove my identity. And if my identity is already established, well, then my life is simply a place to express the reality of my God-given value. So what we're saying is, I don't work for identity, I work from identity. I don't work for security, but from security. I don't work for abundance as much as I do work from abundance. And so I think that's really critical. We've talked about this many times before. I wrote about it in both of my books.
Right.
This idea, we live in a culture where we think our identity is still in question, and we've got to do something or possess something or impress somebody. Mm-hmm. And then finally, maybe I can feel like I matter, like I have purpose, like I have meaning.
Yeah, and over the course of your life, again, it's a process. When you're young, you have enough energy to chase all that down for as long as you have that energy. Some of us get tired earlier. Some of us may take a little longer. But at some point, you come to realize that those reaching out for your identity is not working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And way back when, as you said, you wrote about it in your book, you had a sabbatical way back in 2000. And I joined you on it, even though I was just a stay-at-home mom. And all of you out there who are mothers are laughing now because
just,
you know, just.
As though.
With three young children. But I did join you on that. And I let go of sort of my looking outward for things. And we sort of hunkered down for that year in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I walked away with a single moniker for myself.
Mm.
Over the course of the year, just with the work I was doing with God, I walked away with this as my identity. Child of God. And it felt so freeing.
Mm-hmm.
So my name, Child of God, is
most
central. It's my identity. It's central and important. And it's now, how long is that now? 17 years later, I am still trying to just live from that central place.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's move on to challenge number three. So number three is developing self-discipline and self-confidence to live an unhurried life. So let's start with self-discipline. You know, whenever we talk about self-discipline, we have to begin at the place of desire, because that's really underneath
mm-hmm.
the discipline. So
yes.
The question then is, what do you really want? What good way of life and work is God inviting you into? You know, anyone can make a list of goals and resolutions. And this is we're recording this the first week of January.
Yep.
So it is that time of year where people are making goals and resolutions.
Yep.
But we all know that such resolutions can fade rather quickly. That's why we like to begin with the question of desire. What do you really want? This is the engine that sustains us as we move toward our goals and develop disciplines. So for example, if I say, I'm going to lose 10 pounds this month.
Yes.
Which a lot of us are saying, oh no, it's January. I better take off this.
I added a little over the holidays.
Whatever I did in December. I want to lose 10 pounds. May not be enticing enough to resist that donut, right? Or that extra slice of pizza, whatever your thing is. However, if you can say, I want to be clear-minded and I want to feel physically good today. Well, that might tap into something a little more inspiring.
Yes.
You know, I want to lose 10 pounds. Well, I don't want to lose 10 pounds right now. You can change your mind really quickly, but I actually do want to be clear-minded. I do want to feel physically good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's self-discipline. On self-confidence, it's a bit of a different animal. You know, once you've come to terms with desire and have made your way into the self-discipline of practices that work for you, you may run into a lack of confidence.
Mm.
What do I do? How do I do it? When do I do it? You may not feel you have what it takes to move forward. So in this case, now is a great time to remember these three things. Start small, go slow, and be gracious.
Mm-hmm.
I love those three phrases. It makes me feel like I could actually do it.
They sound a little counterintuitive to a lot of us hyperactive, get out there and make something happen people.
Yes. This is sort of the long-term approach. Start small, go slow, and be gracious. It's difficult to build confidence if you're trying to bite off more than you can chew. So again, let yourself learn in stages. Build habits. The amount of practices you choose may need to be decreased, or the amount of time you spend on certain practices may need to be decreased as you begin. It's okay to start small, go slow, and be gracious. So to summarize my two ideas here about self-discipline and self-confidence, first you want to tap into desire, and then you want to take manageable bites.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sometimes we start with self-discipline as though it were some sort of burdensome training that I need to do to be better, or it's kind of blurry, you know. And one of the things both of us have learned, and this is sort of classic spiritual formation wisdom, that desire is space, it's training, it's opening up a framework for bringing my desires to God. That's really what we're trying to do. And so I think that's really important. And then I've often said anything worth doing is worth starting small, which again is just sort of counterintuitive. A lot of us have the instinct that, you know, if something's worth doing, start huge, start big, start heroic. And of course, the problem with those is it feels really exciting at first. I mean, it feels like a stadium where we're starting a marathon and everyone's cheering and yay, and I've run 100 yards, look at me. And then we leave the stadium and now we're running along the road outside the stadium and we're at mile 12. Now we're thinking and feeling different things.
Uh-oh.
Maybe we sort of forgot this thing was actually a marathon.
Yeah.
So it helps. Start small, go slow, be gracious. That's really good. Challenge number four was put this way. It's the challenge of learning to be patient with myself and trusting Jesus to lead me into an unhurried life that reflects how he lived. So there is a sense, like in all transforming work in our lives, we've got to remember that it really is more about God unhurrying us than it is about us unhurrying ourselves. Mm. See, we cooperate with God's initiative. We go at the pace of Jesus. We learn to become unhurried by walking with the one who is unhurried. So we unhurry ourselves in God's unhurried presence. I just find that so inviting and so helpful and so life-giving and so much less burdensome. It's the reality that God really is holding the heavy end of the yoke that we share. Yeah. So, for example, patience is just one of those words. Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it really is. Most people, it sort of flies in the face of our culture, sort of our fast-paced, right now, waiting is the worst culture. Mm. So in order to learn to be patient, we almost have to make a conscious decision to be countercultural.
That's right.
We have to step out of our innate tendency to desire immediacy. It's just burned in, isn't it?
Mm.
So it's okay for things to take time. It's okay for me to be slow about some things. Maybe they need to go deeper, and that just takes time. Maybe I don't understand what's going on, and that's okay too. Grace must walk hand in hand with patience.
That's really good.
We must give grace to ourselves as Jesus actually leads us in his ways. Jesus is not in a hurry. I mean, you wrote a book about this, right?
Yes. Turns out I did.
What was the subtitle of an unhurried life?
Following Jesus' Rhythms of Work and Rest.
Right. And Jesus was not tense or anxious. And as Dallas Willard has said, he was relaxed and he got a lot done. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. So let's transition here to challenge number five. And challenge number five is overcoming my guilt when I feel like I'm producing less because I slowed down.
Ah, yes.
So guilt, here's the guilt.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, so guilt is a nefarious thing, isn't it? It always has a way of being a large, heavy, wet blanket that just gets thrown on you, so making it almost impossible to move. So on this challenge, I think we need to take a good look at the words true productivity, because this person said they feel like they're producing less.
Because they slowed down, of
because
course.
Because they
the math,
slowed down.
That's how math works.
Well, if I slow down, there won't be as much stuff. But now we have to talk about productivity then, right?
That's right.
The problem here is that we just might feel like we're producing less. But remember, just because you're getting a lot of things done at breakneck speed doesn't mean you're actually being productive.
That's right.
So let's also remember again that unhurried is mostly an inward dynamic. Again, it's a matter of the soul. So let's imagine two workers side by side. They are both trying to accomplish the same thing, which is composing an article for an upcoming newsletter. That's pretty benign, but there's something they can do.
It's practical.
One of them is anxious, rushed, they're distracted by what's coming up next after they do this. They're thinking about the rest of their day and all the to-dos. Anxiety here, in that case, is not the seedbed of creativity. Can you see how if you're distracted like that, you won't be producing?
Hmm.
So the other person, though, has made their way to a sense of presence. They are being right where they are. And they know that other things are coming up in their day, but for the next 30 minutes, they only have to focus on this article. So they do. So now, which one do you think will be able to produce the better article? So that's goes without saying, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But creativity flourishes in places of peace and grace. Creativity is crowded out of anxious and driven places. The question becomes, what if I do seem to produce less? But what if that less is of much higher quality? Is it possible that the things that fell to the wayside weren't critical? Everything in our life does not have equal weight. There are likely things that you are doing that actually require less time from you or might even need to fall off of your to-do list. So it's good to be honest about this and discover what might be truly important.
Yeah, this whole matter of overcoming guilt because I feel like I'm producing less, it's really a mirage.
Right.
You know, we're so wrapped up in the next thing we need to do and quickly getting to it, there's not enough space to sort of take a step back or, you know, get about 6 feet above ourselves just to take a look at the lay of the land and realize sometimes, you know, getting my inbox to zero may feel good, but the odds that that is the most productive thing I did measured in, you know, real productivity is probably thin.
Right.
And that's the thing. What actually matters? Hurry rarely gets me to things that actually and deeply matter, which brings us to challenge number 6, and that is the anxiety I feel in certain situations. Now, I've said often that I still struggle with anxiety. It's a continual challenge for me. And I realized recently that anxiety is just more of an internal habit than it is necessarily an outwardly provoked condition. It's just something that happens inside of me. And that's why God can invite me to not worry, but instead to talk to him about my concerns. Mm. I've said this many times, you know, maybe, just maybe, Jesus is right about worry. You know, I claim to be one of his followers, and I claim to hold him as my life's mentor, my master. Maybe when he talks about worry, he really knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
That he's got some real wisdom for me. If you were to look at my emotions, you know, you'd have to come to the conclusion that I'm not all that confident that he knows what he's talking about. But maybe I actually live in a kingdom where there is a shepherd who can lead me to places of abundance and refreshment, and I don't need to worry. And that when I feel worry, rather than just parking there and letting that become a motor that gets me running, I might take a moment and take a step back from that feeling and say, maybe this feeling is wrong. Maybe this feeling, one of the things I've sometimes said is that my anxiety is an absolutely horrible predictor of the future. It has a terrible track record. And being able to remember that is a way of being able to just realize, you know, I could let go of this anxiety. I could find my way to peace instead. And I'd probably do much better work from a place of peace than I would from the place of anxiety, where I've often done my work.
Yeah, we share this in common. Anxiety is personal for me as well. And it's definitely an engine that runs dirty for me, though. I can get things done and push through, but I'm robbed of much of the goodness of the situation. I'm not moving out in peace, which means I'm likely not moving out of love. I have seasons where anxiety feels more at bay than others, but it's an unwelcome sort of lingering companion in my life. And sometimes when I want to return to an unhurried way, I can catch myself being anxious in the middle of a day. So I literally stop in my tracks. I stop and I take a deep breath and I bring my mind back into the space where I'm standing. Because normally for me, anxiety means my thoughts are flurrying around to the past and the future.
Yeah, they're not here.
They're not here. If I bring myself to the moment, actually, I can calm down relatively easily. So I take a deep breath, and then as I exhale, I really focus on slowing my insides. And typically a verse will pop into my mind, usually something like, do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. Wise words from Jesus, or from the Psalms, cease striving and know that I am God. And in these moments, these verses, they're not cliches,
right?
But they are lifelines for me to move back to reality. So let's move on to number 7.
Excellent.
Challenge 7 is my preference for multitasking rather than doing one thing at a time. Now, can we all, let's be honest.
Sure.
Multitasking can feel very good and productive. Look at all I'm getting done. And
I'm getting 2 or 3 or 4 things done at the same time.
At the same time. It's so good. And you type A people, you're just so happy about that, right?
Oh, well, but yeah.
Even a type B can get excited about doing 2 things at once. So there may not be anything wrong with this, especially if your job requires it. Now, as much as we just joked about it, sometimes you have a job.
You got to stay in touch with a few things at once.
And there's a phone ringing and a person's at your desk and you're typing something. We get it. But most of us are probably already aware that real multitasking, it's a myth. You can't actually do 2 things at once. Your brain shifts your attention between the two back and forth. So they're not really getting your full undivided attention. And again, even if you have to multitask because of your job, you need to be sure that when you're shifting your concentration to one to the next, you're doing it with some modicum of attention so things don't fall through the cracks. This is a common scenario I'm sure you're familiar with in your work. But here's the thing. If we keep ourselves in constant multitask mode, it can make it difficult to concentrate and focus on the work of our soul. Remember, we change at the pace of transformation, and multitasking may not be the best move as you cooperate with God's transforming work within you. You don't have to multitask your soul.
Yeah, and I think that's important to realize. You know, some multitasking, they're just relatively meaningless tasks that just need to get done, and you need to clean something up, you need to resolve something. It doesn't require deep thought or heavy engagement. But the problem is, if we get into the habit of always being in multitasking mode, then the kinds of activities and engagement that really require deep and full attention, we just won't have that capacity.
Right.
We'll take our multitasking mode to those things too, like listening to another person. People don't appreciate when you listen to them with like 10% of your attention. It doesn't really help.
Right.
Or working on a strategic planning process or doing creative work. Those really function best, not in a multitasking mode, but in a fully focused mode. So there you go. Challenge number 7, our preference for multitasking. The 8th challenge that we came up with from this survey was knowing how to find quiet for our minds and hearts, and making contemplative time with God. And here, one of the ways I like to think about this is, I like to think about our lives and even the work of our lives through the metaphor of breathing. So, you know, I've said this before, breathing has two movements. This is not rocket science. We do this every single day. We do this every single minute. Breathing is both inhale and exhale. And sometimes, if you were to look at our lives, you would think that breathing only involves exhale. You know? Try sometime exhaling, and then before you inhale, exhale again. And then without inhaling, exhale yet again. And you will be literally out of breath. And what can happen is, in the way we work, we're just doing, 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 doing. And we're not allowing ourselves to remember that we are, remember that we are present to God and God is with us, to take an inhale, to take a moment to just say, thanks, God, for how you've been with me as I just did this little piece of work. Thanks for how you're going to be with me as I now make this phone call. Doing our work in the presence of God. And so the value of inhale practices, even in the midst, learning how to be receptive right alongside being active. And so it's the value of a listening posture as I engage my work, or a listening posture as I open the Bible and read, or a listening posture as I take a moment to pray at any point in my day. So if, as the scriptures say, I actually am who I am by the grace of God, well then, prayerful quiet, for example, might actually be a way of engaging reality as opposed to imagining that it's a way of avoiding reality. That when I inhale, when I stop and just remember who I am, that is not avoiding the reality of my to-do list or the reality of everything that's on my calendar. It's a way of stepping away from what's in front of me and remembering capital R reality, that yes, God is with me in the midst of all of this. And that's, for me, that's huge.
Yeah. And going back even to the challenge here, the person was talking about finding the time. And I always like to stop at the word find and just reorient for a minute. Often we don't find the time.
Yes.
We have to make the time. And again, this comes back to some of the things we said earlier about desire and about what you think is good. And so it's, in this case, it's going to be good to make the time for these things that you really want. So now we're at challenge number 9. And challenge number 9 is my fear of looking inward. I stay busy to avoid my issues. So, wow.
Pretty real.
This one is real. This person was being very honest. Most of us would say that addressing our issues is not at the top of our fun list.
Yeah.
So I'm amazed that this challenge even came up. Many of us aren't aware that we're doing this, actually, because we're staying busy to avoid. So busyness is the perfect way to keep our subconscious fears and issues at bay.
Doesn't resolve them, but it keeps them at bay.
Isn't it so nice? I don't have to think about this right now. So, yeah. And distraction, of course, is the close cousin. So the first step that I see here is acknowledgement. I think this person actually acknowledging it got on the path already.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying out loud, I have a fear of looking inward, and I am likely staying busy to avoid myself.
Yep.
Gets you moving, right? So most of us will do well, you know, if you have a friend who will listen well to these fears. Now that you're going, oh, I'm afraid, I'm staying busy to, let's, well, okay, then let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
What if you had a really good friend? What if you had a trusted small group? You might even benefit from a conversation with a spiritual director or a counselor, depending on what you discover as you realize you're in denial or covering something up with your busyness. So remember, acknowledging your fear of looking inward is the first step. And then you've got to be ready to do the hard work of not distracting yourself as you lean into it.
Yeah, I think this is a huge one. It's last on the list, you know, number 9. But
yeah.
I think it's a huge reason we get so hurried inside.
Yes.
And our hurry prevents us from being as aware as we could be. We're afraid to be aware, really. We're afraid of what would happen if we slow down and see what's actually going on down there. And we may actually think that staying busy is better. You know, it's at least feels safer. But I know for me, it's when I've slowed down. It's when I've stepped away for a day of solitude. It's when I've taken 15 minutes at the beginning of the day to just sit in quiet, that often the first thing that happens is my fears, my anxieties, they bubble up. And I don't like how it feels. But the fact that they bubble up is good, because they're bubbling up into the presence of the unhurried one. They're bubbling up into the presence of the Prince of Peace. They are bubbling up into the light of the one who delights in mercy and longs to be gracious. And in that place, my fears and my anxieties and all of that can just become quieted in the presence of reality. So there are our 9 practical challenges to living less hurried. I really hope that you found at least 1 or 2 of those practical challenges intersecting with your experience. Many of them are familiar for me. Now, we're looking forward to sharing more of what we're learning in response to your survey responses last year. And we'd love it if you'd subscribe to our weekly emails by going to unhurriedliving.com/connect.
And as always, head on over to learn.unhurriedliving.com and you can enroll in 1 or all of our online courses. We'd love to help you continue to grow in your spiritual journey.
And please do go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. That way, more people will be able to hear about us.
And we'd love to connect with more and more people who want to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better.